and welcome to IRI Growth Insights, featuring IRI thought leaders, industry partners, and guests. For more than 40 years, IRI has been known for its invaluable data, but these podcasts delve into the insights the data reveal to fuel market disruption and market growth for those in the CPG, retail, healthcare, and media markets. I'm your host, Joan Driggs, coming to you from my home in the greater Chicago area. In this special episode of IRI Growth Insights, recorded on April 16th, 2020, we're discussing COVID-19 and its impact on the CPG and retail industries. For daily updates on consumer reaction, real-time data on product categories, as well as insights and implications to the CPG retail industry, I encourage you to visit IRIWorldwide.com to see the IRI COVID-19 dashboard, powered by IRI Liquid Data. At the same location, you'll find a number of COVID-19 reports that provide valuable information across countries, categories, and channels. Hello, welcome to another episode of Fresh Trends with John and Sally. We're at a really interesting time because we're in the midst of COVID-19 here on April 16th, 2020. And I'm talking with my colleagues, Jonna Parker in Phoenix and Sally Lyons Wyatt in Dallas, and their families with puppies at both ends. So this could get interesting. But I'm so happy to welcome you both back. And I hope that you and your families are safe and healthy. I trust they are because you're here with me.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
So, John, I want to start with you, and let's just talk about what's happening with Fresh right now, because everyone, I feel, has been so focused on toilet paper and hand sanitizer, and yet Fresh is such a vibrant, essential part of our lives. Tell us what you see.
Sure, absolutely. Thanks, Joan. It's been a really interesting trend to watch over the last 5-6 weeks now that we've been monitoring the data. As we expected, as the stay-at-home orders started in mid-March, the pendulum shifted very much to the center of the store. Specifically, the first couple weeks with non-edibles and all of the paper products. And I apologize if you hear, I am currently having my children at home, but we'll brave through. At any rate, yes, we've definitely seen that in the first couple weeks of the pandemic, the paper goods, all of the things that were on the news were certainly commanding a lot of share, and general food as well, frozen foods. Fresh food never left the basket, but the share of the store dropped to about 20%. And then also, as we expected, the last 2 weeks, we're looking at week ending first week of April, Fresh is back to the share of the store that we were really expecting, around 25%, 22%. And that's a trend we expect to see in the coming weeks as people fill in what they've stocked up on with the things that they need that perish. And as we get deeper, what's been really, really interesting about the trends is the role that the meat departments played. Very early on, and then throughout each week, it has been one of the departments, the fresh meat department has been a constant in what is in demand on grocery store shelves. And that's part of a big trend that we've seen in our survey data. People are cooking at home more. They're not only staying at home, but they actually want to cook from scratch. They have a lot of interest in it. And the fresh meat department certainly been a big part of that. And so that that department continues to not just grow, you know, week to week, but, you know, we're still at 40% sales lift from the prior year. And it's certainly continuing.
How much of that
that's a little bit about
is, how much mm-hmm. do you think of with meat in particular, do you think that's panic shopping? Because it really did mm-hmm. seem empty shelves, just like with toilet paper. And I know that people are eating, you know, all that food dollar has moved back into the home, but is it that much meat? Are we eating that much meat?
Yeah. I mean, it's a truly unprecedented time. We've been talking about with our meat suppliers that there is likely more meat, especially beef, chicken, pork, and turkey, than there has likely ever been in American fridges and freezers. You know, meat is still a vital part of the meal. And whether it be for lunch or especially for dinners at home, we're not carting our kids to soccer practice or commuting to and from work, the idea of having a nice home-cooked meal is really centered around meat. What are we going to have as center of plate? And that's where the meat department, I think, has played a continued role. Certainly, supply shortages were an issue early on because so much of this caught so much of the industry unaware. But from talking with our meat partners, they have been running the plants. The things have been going well. You now do still see more availability of meat. Certainly, things like grinds and even surprisingly to me, you know, whole roasts like whole bird, you know, whole bird chicken, whole bird turkey are way up every, you know, than we would expect. But people are finding the meat that they want and need right now. And even though there's been a lot of talk in the media about plant closures that are expected given the health crisis, from talking with the supply chain, there should still be enough meat to go around. We do not want folks to think that there's going to be a complete meat shortage. There's so much versatility, right, in meat. One of the problems that plagued that department before this crisis was that people buy maybe only a handful of cuts. They were buying the things they'd always bought when it came to the meat department, despite a plethora of options that were there in all of the major proteins. And, you know, one of the things we've been talking a lot about is this is a tremendous opportunity right now for the meat industry. You've got folks who went to the store to maybe find ground beef, but opted into ground chicken and they'd never tried it before. You have folks thinking, I'll try to make, you know, ribs at home or maybe try some seafood I've never tried before because I want to replicate my favorite restaurant. So much education and recipe and awareness is really needed now that people are buying more types of meat than ever.
Yeah. And I know people are definitely turning to social media for a lot of inspiration and, you know, even a little help. So Sally, what else are we seeing out in the fresh world?
One area that I find fascinating is produce. And when we started to look at produce, and John had talked about the last 5 weeks, which is when we saw a lot of the huge kind of cocoon stocking, if you will. But the first case was in Washington State. It was the 21st of January. And so when you look at the 11 weeks from that moment till the first week of April, what is incredible to me is that produce has actually outpaced the growth they had in 2019 in 11 weeks. So it is incredible. The volume had kind of plateaued a bit in produce, but not this year. What we've seen through COVID is not only did they make up, there was a little bit of actually, it was a flat to declining last year. They were able to just totally rocket past that, which I think is incredible. The other thing that's also interesting is that the top sellers have remained the top sellers. But we've also seen potatoes have an incredibly positive momentum as we've gone through COVID, because back to what John was talking about with people cooking the meals and and wanting to have some foods on hand that if they didn't get a chance to go back to the store, or if they couldn't get into the delivery queue for online, potatoes, it takes a long time before those go out freshness. So it was actually something we've seen that people are really resonating with some foods that maybe they abandoned in the past that they've embraced through COVID, because back to what John said, it could have been that what they were looking for wasn't available. But at the same time, there's something about comfort during situations like this. And you see that they've turned to that, especially with their favorites in produce and some of their favorites that they just hadn't embraced in the most recent past. They're embracing it now.
Yeah, really interesting. And there's nothing like a sack of potatoes to stretch the meal, right, across the week.
Exactly.
So, you know, I've been talking a lot about COVID, putting out a lot of reports every week. In fact, by all means, I hope people visit our website, www.iriworldwide.com. We've got a fantastic COVID portal and a repository of all sorts of reports, rich in data. But so much of what we've been talking about is how we can learn from recessionary behaviors or even crises. You know, we talk a lot about some of the hurricanes, both Irma and Harvey. But I'm wondering if you guys could touch on those and kind of tell us a little bit about how recessionary behaviors impact fresh departments?
Sure, I'll take that first. And then it's interesting because I think that it is very different in meat, deli, and bakery than it is in produce. So let me cover off on those departments first. I have the benefit of having worked in fresh foods and looking extensively at the past recession. And what was really interesting about that time was retailers didn't expect when the market tumbled and the housing crisis happened, we knew that people weren't going to go to restaurants as much. And so the expectation in the industry, just as the recession was starting, was that it was going to be a race to the bottom. People weren't going to buy fresh because there are obvious cheaper alternatives in the store. And yet the opposite happened. Items like artisan bread and high-end deli meals and even buying, you know, premium cuts of steak were very much in demand the first tough year of the Great Recession. And when we did look into it, consumers looked at it as a cheaper alternative, not in the store, but in all of food, right? It was cheaper than going to a restaurant. It was even cheaper in some cases at the time than doing fast food was to get a deli meal instead of an outside meal. And that was really unique behavior that caught a lot of the industry off guard and started to propel what we ended up seeing in the early 2010s, which was expanded fresh perimeter, especially in deli, especially in bakery. This is a different situation from a food standpoint. Restaurants aren't just more expensive, they're closed. And people are home more than they've ever been, arguably. Probably, I know in my life and most of my friends' lives, I mean, where, you know, when you're busy and a mom or a dad and, you know, you're home more. And so the idea of having to go to the store for convenience meals isn't as necessary as it was in the recession, where you were still juggling economic pressure and life pressure. This pandemic has that uniqueness to it. And as we've been talking about throughout this, the key takeaway is people are making their own meals from scratch, which means we are seeing negative year over year, not just week to week, year over year trends in the deli prepared foods department. Three things are causing that. One definitely is CDC guidelines are, of course, shutting down different parts of deli prepared and what retailers can make safely. Consumers are a little wary right now of things that are made in store. There's a perception that it's made in store and others have touched it. But the third, honestly, is if you have time, making your own something is happening as opposed to just buying something quick and having to. I mean, this is a time where people are really trying to up their cooking skills and use that as an activity. And that, I think, makes, you know, and same thing in the meat department. We're seeing unprecedented prices for premium cuts of steaks, premium cuts of seafood, or premium, you know, catches of seafood because those are coming from the food service sector. Yet consumers are going, do I really want to do that? So they don't know what the future holds economically. And so we're seeing things in those departments, meat, deli, and bakery, different in this go around of economic pressure than we saw last time because consumer mindset's different. But I know produce is actually a very different story, Sally. Do you want to talk about that?
It is. And one of the things that I've noticed, and probably most people listening, if you've had to go to the store, produce is one of those areas where in the past you loved the fact that you could go and pick and either thump on a cantaloupe or squeeze, you know, a lemon or, you know, understand, or even when you think about avocados and trying to get, well, which type of ripeness do you want? Same with a banana. Well, now that's almost looked in a bad way because that means more people have touched the products. And so one of the things that I've seen during COVID that I think will transcend as we get out and we get into the great lockdown recession, I think there is going to be this need for retailers to offer a little bit of the following. I think some people are still going to want to go and touch it and they've bought their vinegar and they're going to soak their vegetables and their fruits in the vinegar and they're going to feel good about it, right? So you're going to still need that. But then what I've also seen happening is these wholesalers that don't have restaurants to sell to right now, they or not as many because there are some open for takeout, but not as many, then they've started to sell to the public. And the public is like, okay, this is kind of cool. I can get a box of fruit and vegetables and minimal people have touched it because it didn't go through all of the chain of command, if you will, of getting it into the store. I am doing better. I'm doing more for my local farmers. I'm getting it much, much faster than I would as it goes through the supply chain, if you will, to get to the store. And so I think from a retailer perspective, that means they may need to start offer boxing of produce. And, you know, when you think about fruits and vegetables, and box that up in order for consumers to come in and say, okay, this has been minimally touched. I like this. So you're going to have, I think you're going to have a little bit of both of people that are a little wary about how many people have touched something. And so they're going to want something packaged up with what they're looking for. And then there's going to be others that still want to go in because it's just something they love to do. And they want to be able to get the fruit and the vegetables the way that they like.
You know, you just reminded me, I hadn't really considered this at all, but in Europe, you often find produce wrapped, like in plastic wrap and stuff. And I really always did think that's a lot of packaging, but I think that it speaks to exactly what you're talking about, doesn't it?
It does. And they actually, I live in Dallas and they've been doing that as well. So you can walk in and you've got some things that have been shrink wrapped or wrapped in like a kind of a clear wrap. And so that's starting to happen. But I do think that there's some magic that's coming out of what we're finding with the hardship restaurants that are having, that these wholesalers are getting extremely creative. And to the point where when you think about online, and I know we're probably going to talk a bit about that, you know, some of these companies are got their claim to fame of putting kits together or putting a box together that they deliver to you. And it's kind of like a surprise and you get to open it up and you don't know what you're going to get. I think when you think about produce and you think about the opportunities that are out there, these local companies are zeroing in on design your own box and we'll give you that, pick from all of this. I think if retail can figure out a magical way to do that as well with their online services or in-store or both, I think they're going to find that magic to keeping these trends that I talked about at the beginning, keeping them strong. I think it's going to take that to keep them strong because otherwise availability is out there. They can get fruits and vegetables now in many more places than just the farmer's market or just the retail store. There's so many more aspects to where you can get it. So I think what's going to be different about this recession is the availability and also just how indeed you can package things up in unique and different ways.
We'll call it availability and ingenuity, right? Because
there you go. I love that.
Yeah, that's what we have to be working on. And, you know, I think that it's so interesting because we are going to be, and we'll get to this in a minute, but there are going to be so many new behaviors that really stick with us. And that has been the hallmark of every major episode in our history. So I think that we're in the middle of it and we probably won't recognize it, but gosh, it is fun to be part of what it will become. So you did talk about some really interesting opportunities, particularly around wholesalers. I've also heard of restaurants kind of going into the grocery business. And in fact, heard today that Open Table, which no longer is like able to book restaurant reservations, is taking reservations for grocery shopping. So, and a lot of it might be around specialty grocery and restaurants that are offering food, which I think is, again, it's American ingenuity at its best. But what other opportunities are there? Let's talk a little bit about e-com, because so many more shoppers are turning to e-commerce. In fact, IRI does we've been doing weekly surveys of consumers for the past 5 or 6 weeks. And what we found is that at the beginning, 8% of shoppers were like, yep, you know, I'm buying groceries via e-commerce. Well, now it's up to 23%. And I know that things have been really kind of a mixed bag out there in terms of delivery and what they can actually buy online. But I would think that has always been the weak link for fresh foods. And maybe now is an opportunity to kind of turn that around a little bit. So can either one of you kind of speak to that?
Sure. I mean, I'll start from a high level at something I felt pretty passionately about and I've illustrated in some of our past studies. It was really hard to buy fresh food online beyond the basics. And it still is today. And a lot of this is for a multitude of reasons. They're all good reasons, right? As an industry in fresh, we often are not as deep pocketed or as, you know, savvy marketing wise as big teams to work on e-commerce platforms. But the reality is that also in, you know, the weekly data that you've shared, Joan, I've seen you've had a 66% jump in food and beverage bought online year over year for the month of March. And in food and beverage, which fresh foods is a big part, 77% of that dollars was spent at click and collect, where you wanted to go to your retailer that you trusted and order the food from them and then have that either delivered or picked up. And not to some third party, not to something you didn't know. There's so much trust placed in the retailer's role. And I think that is absolutely what we hear in Fresh. So I think the tremendous opportunity in e-com for the industry now is, how do we look at the online environment? Sally's idea about boxes is fantastic. Something we've talked a lot about, right, is people want solutions. You know, right now the solution is very much focused on staples and things they can use multiple meals or stock in their freezer. But over time, you know, just giving them something that is this department versus that department, which is how the shopping experience online is at most major grocers, isn't necessarily fulfilling that need. We've talked earlier about how there's a plethora of meat and produce and, you know, ingredients that people have never had before at their homes. Retailers and suppliers using the online ordering platform to spark meal ideas, to suggest different items, just like Amazon does, to give you an incentive to load that box. I think that should be an opportunity we're all looking at right now for that ingenuity piece. The barrier to online has been broken, but if the experience is still clunky after it's a necessity to not want to go out and go shopping, I don't know if we're going to see the repeat. What do you think, Sally?
You know, I'm an interesting case study because I used to always buy my weekly shopping trip online. And then when those huge weeks in March started to hit and everybody was trying to go online, I would have to wait 5 or 6 days to get something delivered. And my pantry was bare at the time. So it's not like I could just wait that long. So I ended up, now I've been going back to the store more because I can't get in line because we are working. So I'm like the different case study for sure. But with that said, what you ended on is exactly what I think is going to happen. If more people have situations like me, then this, it's not going to stick long term. So I agree with you 100%. The other thing that I think is interesting about the click and collect comment you made, I do think that that's probably where you're going to see some things stick more than ever. And I have seen, and well, again, I talk to a lot of people like the two of you. And in what I'm learning, the older generations, if you will, so the seniors as well as the boomers, who really kind of kept all of that at bay, have now experienced it. And they're like, this is great. So that those habits, I think, will stick. I think the click and collect is the one that will stick hands down. I think the online and getting it delivered, I think that one's been the clunky one. So we'll see what happens with that. Click and collect, I think for people that are experiencing it now, it's here to stay. I don't think that's going anywhere, and I think that will grow. The only reason why that'll get tripped up is back to what we talked about a second ago. That means yet another set of hands have touched the products. So the only reason why it won't is if people have a phobia around that. And a phobia is probably not the right word, but if they have concerns about that. Mm-hmm. And so if they have concerns about that, then I think there, that would be the only thing that trips it up.
Well, I think that there is a little bit of a workaround. You know, retailers in particular, many retailers have put a lot of money into the infrastructure for click and collect and have promoted it. And we see it. And so those are the retailers that are doing very well right now. What COVID is doing is introducing a whole new layer of in-store training, expectation around cleanliness that is not going to go away. You know, we've all adapted to what we have to put up with at airports, you know, and now we forget that we used to just march into airports with our families and walk up to the gate to say goodbye to Uncle Jim. You know, it just, that is so old school. So I think that everything is going to come with different layers of training, different protocols around safety and health. And I think that what click and collect has going for it is that it's the same people. It's your trusted store. And you might even ask for the same person to be your fulfillment person, just like they have with, you know, some of the different delivery systems that are out there. You have kind of your own personal shopper. I think retailers will start putting their best fulfillment people forward to work with and provide more comfort and a greater level of trust in the safety or the integrity of those products. So I think you're absolutely right. So as we kind of move towards like the end of our time together today, everybody wants us to have a crystal ball and look out into the future. And I'd like you both to kind of provide some commentary on where you think fresh is going to go and what it's going to look like as we emerge from COVID-19.
Johnny, you want to go first?
Sure. You know, anyone who knows me well is probably laughing that I'm pausing because I rarely do that when I answer questions that excite me. But truly, because of what I said earlier about this being such a different consumer mindset than we've ever seen, I'm a little hesitant right now, this early in the game, to be too emphatic in my predictions. And I think that the things we brought up on this call, honestly, this is a moment. I'd say the only thing that comes to my mind that I'm very much assured of is it's a whole new consumer now. It's a whole new consumer mindset. Your airport analogy is a perfect one, Joan. Before 9/11, we had behaviors that changed instantly on 9/12, 13, 14 of 2011, of 2001. So I think the same thing is going to happen post-pandemic. There is going to be a lot of consumer reluctance for big gatherings for some time. And big gatherings are going to take a different view. And the food industry, the retail food industry, has a tremendous opportunity to listen and understand what that means. And in fresh is where we're going to see the most difference, right? We were the parts of the store that had a lot of service still happening. We were reluctant to embrace e-com. There was this belief that people weren't going to want to buy fresh online. And those things have all changed in the last 4 weeks alone. Mm-hmm. And I think it's truly a moment where we need to study before and after. And some of the things of before I think will stick. Health and wellness. How many people, I know I am, are using this opportunity to become a better person and to not just lay around and watch Netflix and work out more. And, you know, that will carry over to our food choices. The idea of wanting to cook more and be more curious about our food and be excited about our food is tremendous benefits for fresh. But I think so much of the industry in my time here has been about pushing volume. And we've been handed a global pandemic to say, it's not about volume. It's about the right foods in the right sizes to the right people in the right ways. And so pivots in packaging, pivots in package sizes, pivots in merchandising, I think are what's going to be the immediate. And honestly, when we look back 5 years from now, we'll be able to pin it to this moment. So that's a very general way of saying, I think there's tremendous opportunity in fresh foods, but I think we will have the most material change when it comes to how we're merchandised, packaged, and sold.
Yeah, I agree with Jonna. I think first of all, we know that it's going to be a slow roll as the shelter in place comes out. We also know that I heard today we might have hit 20% unemployment, which is just daunting and sad and in so many ways. And I know so many of those people that are not employed and their habits, it will take time to figure what their new normal is going to be. So I think one of the aspects we haven't talked about would be SNAP households. And I think as you think about fresh and you think about the unemployment, that how many people will be part of that SNAP program and what types of things will they be looking for, which means price is going to be critical to get right. So as Jonna was talking about the variety of sizes and the assortments, well, getting those priced where you can appeal to the different segments out there, including probably a bit of a larger low income than we've seen in a very long time in this country, hopefully for a very short period of time. But it will be something that getting through this and coming out of it as we slowly get back to people getting in and opening up restaurants and other what the government would call non-essential, which I would argue, but those non-essentials being able to go back to work, then as that starts to happen, then the retailers and the manufacturers in the fresh business have to figure out that price size architecture and get that right. So that's one thing. I think another aspect of, we've been talking about the top trends in fresh now for over 6 years. Those trends are probably going to be extremely relevant. It's just they're going to take on a little different twist because of COVID, because of the habits that are changing. So I agree with Jonna in that. I think holistic health is still going to be around. I think convenience will be around, but yet a little bit different. And we're going to have to find affordable convenience. I think that's going to be key. And then I also, there was something that was going on across the country for a while, and many retailers are still doing it. But I think that imperfect fruit, imperfect vegetables, I think they need to bring that front and center, because it really doesn't matter if you have the prettiest apple or if you have the prettiest, you know, set of banana, who cares, right? You want fresh produce, fresh meats, fresh. And if they are a little imperfect, who cares? And I think, so that's going to be, if it's affordable, that's going to be key. So I think if, when you think about what's going to happen and what's going to transcend beyond, I think the trends will be there. They'll have a little twist. I think convenience will be out there. It's just got to be affordable. And I think we have to appeal to the different segments of the population a little bit differently because of how the world's going to look post COVID.
Wow. Yeah. You guys, you're fantastic. So some of the things that I heard today were that, you know, we are privileged to be in a country that does have such a vast array and supply of fresh foods across the store. It's just going to take a little bit of ingenuity to see how things kind of get repackaged for us. We expect to see like e-commerce really be one of the things that sticks around as we emerge from COVID-19. And it's a great opportunity for retailers to kind of think about how they're going to tackle that. And I really did like, Sally, what you were saying about affordability, because I firmly believe, like you, that food dollar is going to mostly stay in the home once we emerge from this. But at the same time, we've been cooking from scratch 3 meals a day, and that gets kind of exhausting. So I'm glad that convenience can be part of affordability. So with that, thank you so much. And I look forward to our next chat on Fresh Trends with Jonna and Sally. Have a great day and stay safe.
Thanks, Joan.
You as well, Joan. Thank you. Take care.
Thank you for listening. Please visit IRIWorldwide.com to view the IRI COVID-19 dashboard and insights portal, where you'll have access to daily updates, in-depth reports, as well as observations and implications for the CPG retail industry. Please become a subscriber of IRI Growth Insights and let us know what you want to learn more about. We'll serve it up in a future IRI Growth Insights episode. Look for us wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to review IRI Growth Insights. Also, visit us on the web at IRIWorldwide.com and connect with us on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn.